Yay! Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I am so happy to be back with all of you. And we are going to, if you want to find your place in the book, we'll be on page 1774, toward the top. So we ended mid-cameo last week. So we will pick up where we left off. And let's go ahead and begin our time together, as we always do, with a meditation, a brief period of meditation. So if you are able, please join me in sitting quietly for a few moments. There's so much happening out there in the world. Let's come within to this quiet, still space that we all share. This space of I need do nothing, where we turn within and we rest in the truth. We rest in the truth and know that everything that's unfolding is an opportunity for us to learn, for us to grow, and not for us to hide. As A Course in Miracles says, from this space of I need do nothing, the Course says it's from this space that you will be directed and guided for all the busy doings on which you are sent. It's this place of deep connection that we find our rest and our respite. And as we go out on our busy doings out in the world, as we are directed, we always have this space to come back to rest. And it's even in this space that we can connect with guidance and with the Holy Spirit. In whatever way the Holy Spirit communicates with us. This holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Oh, it feels good to be with all of you. So as I said before, and in the just in the sharing with the Facebook group, for those of you who are tuning in, not on our live call, I will just share that for those of you, I guess, I don't know if we'd have to be friends. It's on my personal Facebook profile. I've had a few people reach out to me and say, Corinne, everything, you know, are you okay? Because I shared a meme that has generated a lot of discussion, some, you know, great comments and supportive comments and questioning comments and unkind comments and all sorts of things surrounding what happened at the Capitol with and it being a demonstration of white privilege, which is a whole other discussion that unfortunately is not necessarily linked to our reading tonight, but that we can still talk about. And I just want to let everybody know that this, yes, I am fine. And this is part of my learning. Speaking up and taking a stand is part of my learning. And yeah, so it's all good. And I'm all in. So I just felt like saying that for anybody who was wondering. I found it so helpful in my journey with the Loveland sisters, with Freedom and PY and Emily. hearing from them where their learning has been in our process together of talking about race and the course. And so just since we're together every week, I thought, you know, for what it's worth, if it's helpful to hear about what my learning is, it's about speaking fearlessly and not being afraid of being attacked, because that's been my fear for a very long time. Even when I started teaching the course, I was terrified. My first blog post, I thought like the Catholic religion was going to excommunicated that, like, you know, so it was like this terrible fear, like this silly fear. So it's been an ongoing part of my journey to be able to speak up, speak out. And so I'm actually quite grateful and almost pleased in a way that it's feeling so much more comfortable to be able to take a stand and not feel rattled by it. So before we begin reading, again, we're on page 1774, cameo 14. We're in the middle, late part of the cameo, actually. We're going to start reading the dictation that Helen took down from Jesus, where he says it's very hard to get out of the chain of miscreation. So that everybody wants to just find their place in the book there. Before we begin, does anybody have any questions or comments before we start reading? To give while you're thinking, if you have any questions, to give just a quick, like really quick recap. The title of this cameo is The Chain of Miscreation, and Jesus decided to take some time with Helen and Bill to look carefully at miscreation, you know, misthought along the way, and how sort of one thing has led to another, knowing that the flip side of that is that there's a chain of miracles that can also be at work, that when we choose love, that can be like a chain, an interlocking chain of forgiveness or an interlocking chain of miracles. But we're looking at the negative side today, because I guess there were a lot of things that happened in a short amount of time. And so it's been so helpful to hear what Jesus has to say. Before I start reading, any questions? Looks like we're good. Okay, let's do it. So Jesus says, it is very hard to get out of the chain of miscreation, which can arise out of even the simplest misthought. To borrow one of your own phrases, this kind of human tragedy is far easier to avert than to undo. You must both learn not to let this kind of chain reaction start. You will not be able to control it once it has started, because everything and everyone will be pulled into the misprojection and misinterpreted accordingly. Nothing is lovely to the unloving. This is because they are creating ugliness. You, Helen, were definitely not acting right-mindedly by writing these notes in front of Jonathan. Note that you wrote his name
as... What page did you say we're on?
Oh, Christine. Page 1774. At the very top, we just started reading the guidance from Jesus.
17...
We're in cameo 14, page 1774.
I got cameo 14... And it's 1765.
We read all that last week. We're starting mid-cameo.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
So we're 1774?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No problem. Thank you. All righty. So I'm just going to start that paragraph over. So we're technically in Jesus's dictation here. We're the third paragraph down. You, Helen, were definitely not acting right-mindedly by writing these notes in front of Jonathan. Note that you wrote his name as Jonathan this time, although previously in these same notes, you referred to him as Lewis, intentionally using his real name. Actually, of course, it does not matter what you call him. But note that you felt free at the time to choose the name you preferred to use. This time you were forced to call him Jonathan because you were attacking him when you took the notes in front of him, and now you are falling back on the magical device of protecting his name. I want to pause here for one moment, because I just don't want to lose this example. This is like a really sort of I don't know if it's subtle or not so subtle, but Helen's husband was uncomfortable with what she was doing with taking down the dictation of the course. So she was doing it in front of him this time. And it was therefore like an attack, like a little passive aggressive move for her to be doing this in front of him. And I pause and I reflect on the times that I've actually outed my ego to my husband, but there have been definitely little small times when I've done something or said something. And it's a subtle, you know, it's like a subtle dig. And this is the kind of mind watching and awareness and willingness that Jesus is asking of us, is to be aware of this. Okay. So picking back up, Helen. So this is Helen's writing. I had been considering calling Bill rather ambivalently and just got up to do so, but remembered to ask. The answer was to call him at 8:30. Jesus, it would be better if he called, but he may not decide to do so. If he does not, you should try to get through. And if he has decided not to be there, just leave a message that it is not important. This is still a kindly gesture, and the message should be put in a gentle way. And then it just says, Bill did call Helen Schuckman. Without going into further elaboration, and we could devote many hours to this, let's consider all the time that we had to waste today and all the notes that could have been devoted to a better purpose than undoing the waste and thus creating further waste. There is a better use for time too. I would have liked to have spent some time on corrections of the past notes as an important step before reviewing them. A major point of clarification is necessary in connection with the phrase replacing hatred or fear with love. And then in parentheses, it says, no, Helen, do not check this against the prayer that Bill very kindly typed for you on the card. That was a gracious offering on his part, and you also accepted it with grace at the time. Why should you deprive yourself of the value of the offering by referring this correction first to him? And then it continues in parentheses, these notes did not continue at this time due to the obvious fact that Helen was still clearly not in her right mind. However, Bill later suggested that correct or correct for should be used instead of replace. At the time, he was quite sure about this and he was perfectly right. The reason why it was essential that he make this correction was that the word replace was his choice originally and reflected a temporary misunderstanding of his own. It was, however, both courteous and necessary that he change this himself, both as a sign of his own better understanding and of an avoidance of correction by someone else, which would have been discourteous. Okay, so that's our dictation from Jesus. So let's continue reading with the commentary. Once again, the theme of courtesy in small matters comes through. Helen shouldn't have been taking dictation from Jesus right in front of Lewis, as she knows the whole thing makes him uncomfortable. Helen was aware on some level that this was an attack on him. As a result, she felt compelled to call him Jonathan, magically hoping that if she put the wrong name on her attack thoughts, they would not find their target. Notice, too, how respectful are her instructions about calling Bill, perhaps to patch things up after their tense day. It's best if he calls. Perhaps he had been the one who was more unkind that day. Because of this, Helen should give him time to do that. If he doesn't call by 8:30, she should then try to reach him. If he has decided to make himself unavailable for her call, she should leave a gentle message saying that what she is calling about is not important. The kindness in all this is unmistakable. Lastly, Jesus wants to correct a scribal error in the notes that speaks of replacing hatred or fear with love. This may refer to the line from the prayer given to Bill in chapter 2. And that prayer begins with, I pray that my fear be replaced by an active sense of thy love. Apparently, Bill had very kindly typed up the prayer on a card for Helen to use. Upon hearing that Jesus wants to make a correction, Helen's first impulse is to check what Bill had typed on the card and see if it needs correcting. Jesus, however, asks her not to, saying this discourtesy clashes with the graciousness of Bill's gift. This particular set of notes ends at this time, but we are told that later, Bill had the feeling that the right word was not replace, but correct or correct for. And correct is inserted into what appears to be a second version of this prayer. Jesus says he was right and also says that the original error was actually Bill's, which seems to imply that Bill's thoughts, just like Helen's, could distort Helen's dictation. Therefore, it was courteous and necessary that Bill correct the error himself, since this both reflected his improved understanding and enabled Helen to avoid the discourtesy of correcting him. Jesus's immediate reason for this whole discourse was to create better learning conditions for the study periods he had just assigned Helen and Bill. Yet in the process, he ends up providing an in-depth look into how we typically live our days and how he wants us to live them. The typical day he sketches here is governed by the chain of miscreation, by errors that beget long chains of additional errors. I almost think of it too as like a chain of judgment. In particular, unloving thoughts and unguided decisions. I want to read that again. In particular, unloving thoughts and unguided decisions lead to hurtful actions. This hurtfulness toward others then returns to us and then goes back out from us to still more people. We strain to fix things, but our solutions, quote unquote solutions, tend to cause yet more problems. It's as if our initial errors cast unwanted seeds into a garden. And even as we reach to pull up the resulting weeds, new seeds spill from our hands. We are caught in what feels like an unbreakable cycle. Our perception of everyone and everything gets pulled into this cycle, making the whole world look ugly. And I want to pause there.
Corinne,
yeah.
Does this sound familiar?
Does it, right?
Holy smokes.
This is the world we are in, it feels like an unbreakable cycle. It is not an unbreakable cycle.
No,
it just
not.
Feels that way at times. And our perception gets skewed. Everyone and everything gets pulled into the cycle, making the whole world look ugly. And you know, that just to link to what I just shared before about the post on my Facebook profile, it is so tempting to read some of those comments and to judge back, right? So if somebody said something, I think a comment, I can't remember exactly, but there was something to the effect of like, Corinne, you're better than this. those types of comments. And so it's so easy to want to return the judgment. And what is that doing but just setting up a chain of miscreation, just like this is talking about, or a chain of judgment where we're doing the same, we're ping-ponging, I want to say ping-ponging the ego back and forth, but we're really just strengthening the ego. You know, that's all that we're doing. So it just with whatever we are seeing, with whatever we are experiencing, it becomes that opportunity for forgiveness, for choosing again, and for choosing a miracle. Yeah, I'll pause there. Other comments or questions?
I have a comment.
Yes. Hi, Cheryl.
I was going to say this earlier when you were talking about it, but I wanted to say thank you to you for posting that on your page, because I saw it as a learning opportunity. Because for myself, I just like what you just said, I wanted to judge any, you know, people for not thinking the way I did. And then I ended up commenting and saying that I was seeing where I needed to forgive my brother for sometimes not being so kind with their response. And then also I needed to forgive myself for judging them for that. I saw that clearly for what I was feeling, the feelings that were coming up. But also the reason why I chimed in is because I wanted to ask you or anyone else, have you experienced when you're going through the cleansing and you're trying to, you know, catch yourself in these ways and you're like really putting a lot of work and effort into going through that purification part of your studies, if you have a sense that things seem to, it's almost like I'll like describe it to friends like saying that my karma is really fast now, like it comes back really fast. And I don't know if that's something that happens when you're going through the purification where things just turn around super fast for you. I don't know. Is that something that's possible?
Cheryl, I just had goosebumps because yes, I really relate to your question and affirm, you know, exactly what you're saying, that I relate to that experience. And just to back up for a second, so I don't lose the first part of what you said, thank you for your comment on the post. I very much valued it. I didn't, you know, because there were so many comments, I didn't respond, you know, to all of them, but I saw it and I appreciated it. And yeah, that's you're speaking to our work, right? That's exactly what we have to do. So thank you so much for your sharing about that. To go with then what you just shared now, absolutely. You know, what you're saying reminds me again, I feel like it's another way that the celestial speed up is showing up, where you can actually see that rapid sort of turnaround, be it, I mean, the quick sort of pace can feel like it can show up, I should say, in a number of different ways. It can feel sometimes like it's just one thing after another, like we're learning this lesson and that lesson and that lesson, sometimes simultaneously, sometimes in succession, but it can be like one thing after the other, or, you know, it can also be not like painful where I'm sort of like thinking in my own experience of like that expression, when it rains, it pours, where it feels like so much is happening all at once. Also just the other side of it too, where it feels like, you know, there are shifts coming and things moving and changing very quickly. So I like how you say that your karma is coming really fast. That to me is just a beautiful example of the celestial speed up. So I relate to it.
Can I add one more thing?
Please.
The word boomerang came into my mind. And then also, I wanted to say, because you were talking about asking for guidance, that's even part of it, is that I notice that if I don't ask for guidance for something, I mean, this could be something like I buy something thinking that it's going to be good for me, like a vitamin or something like that, and I don't ask for guidance about it. And see, before I was just used to, that's how I live my life. I just did things on a hunch or whatever. Oh, this might fix the problem. I'm going to try this. And now it's like, if I have a problem, I'm noticing that if I do that and it makes it worse, I get this little voice tell me, you didn't ask for guidance.
Cheryl, I love the image of a boomerang, because that's it. It's like what we're putting out, we're getting back right away. And this process of, you know, this work that we're doing, we see it. We start to see it, how like what we're putting out, we get back right away. And what you're speaking to about asking for guidance, I really relate to that also, because I am going to get a haircut. I'm so excited I thought it was tomorrow. It turns out it's Tuesday, and I'm so glad I checked, because I would have been at this person's house on the wrong day. She let me know that she had COVID and that didn't get a test after she got better to say that it was negative. It's been, you know, a long amount of time. And I checked in, you know, my logical mind would be like, oh, you know, nope, maybe not. But I checked in and it feels like it's fine to go. And that's what I'm and again, this is like, it's been long enough where it's, even my logical mind is like, it's totally fine. But that checking in is everything. And it doesn't mean that we need to use the words, I'm asking for guidance on dot, dot, dot. It's more of like in how it works for me now, it's more of just like tuning in. And does it feel like a full body yes? Or like at least maybe a little bit of brightness or something. It's like a feeling that I get. I don't get it in words. So I love, Cheryl, how you're saying that you're just noticing that you're getting feedback about, you know, asking or not asking. So that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing, Cheryl. I really appreciate it. Beautiful. Anybody Corinne? Else want to speak to that? Hi, John.
Yeah. I was just curious about the part where he talks about that the chain reaction, and you will not be able to control it once it has started because everything and everyone will be pulled into the misprojection and misinterpretation accordingly. I'm thinking, I mean, I see how it's like a snowball rolling downhill, but isn't there any way to turn it around? I mean, you know, yeah. Like you say, asking for guidance, but recognizing, I guess, is the first part.
Yeah,
I don't ask for guidance enough either. So, I definitely don't ask for guidance enough.
John, I just want to also acknowledge you. You also left a comment on that post too that I saw, and thank you. Thank you for your comment. You know, the way that it won't be able to be stopped or interrupted or whatever the language was. The way that I. The way that that sits with me, I think I may have said this last time, that for me, it's like the equivalent of sitting on a banister of like a spiral staircase. And the moment I choose that judgment thought, that attack thought, that ego thought, I'm like, boom, just down in the basement. So I almost take it that way. Once it begins, it's like, boom, you're there, but you have that choice point, the moment that you recognize it's that page 90 prayer and FIP, and I'm looking, I promised myself I would write it down. Paula, what's the page in our purple book? You know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
it's right here, 230, wait a minute.
235, I think.
235, I must have decided wrongly because I'm not a piece. Page 90 is just so burned in my brain.
229.
Thank you. So page 229 in the CE, that's how things start to turn around. I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself, and I can also decide otherwise. I want to decide otherwise because I want to be at peace. I do not feel guilty because the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him, and I choose to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me. That prayer is the perfect reset button for anything. Whenever we find ourselves on that banister or in that ego basement. So John, that's how I take that phrase. You can absolutely turn things around. It's just the moment that we go there, we're there, you know, in the attack, in the judgment, in the ego, but we always have this opportunity to choose again and to use that prayer.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Great questions. Anybody else have a question? Jana, I see Jana's hand up.
Hello.
Hi. Yes.
Well, I've just been thinking, and of course, this is, you all know, well, most of you know that I've been working on training a dog. I think I'll need more therapy than he will when I'm trying to train a therapy dog. I don't know if he has the temperament for a therapy dog, but he's wonderful to teach, and I'm learning so much about how God teaches me by me teaching him. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really struck by this policing the mind in the and it says the unloving thoughts and unguided decisions lead to hurtful actions. And in order to prevent myself from going there, I have to notice right away when those thoughts are taking root. Mm-hmm. And I'm training my dog the way that service dogs are trained by professional people. And it's not done in a hostile way or in a reprimand way or a punishing way.
Sorry.
It's done in a corrective way immediately though. Either through a clicker or through the right word, like yes, when they've done it right, so they know that's what you want. Mm-hmm. Or something of that nature, when they know that's immediately when so they know that that's not what you want. And timing is everything on that. And for me, I'm finding that the Holy Spirit, a lot of times I have that, and like what you said, Corinne, I don't necessarily hear something, I'll feel it. I'll feel that, yes, that's a loving thought. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. And I'm rewarded with peace and joy immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that I'm moving in that direction. And if I'm going in the direction of a judgment, I hear that, you know, that immediately that, that's not the direction you want to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And that the prayer for peace about the, you know, I love the part, and this has been my mantra. I choose the Holy Spirit to choose for God for me today. And by that prayer, I feel like I get a whole day's full of yes and ahs. Mm-hmm. All the time. So I'm being directed how the Holy Spirit, the direction he wants me to go immediately without waiting for, you know, maybe the karma or something from a bad decision. Mm-hmm. I get it immediately. So I don't know. That's just what I was thinking about. That's kind of how I'm sensing the policing the mind is working for me. Not in punishment, but in correcting. I'm going shorter and shorter distances without a correction. So it's less time.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Jana. That was helpful. By the way, people, we haven't read just Jana, you are that policing the mind. We're going to read about in the next paragraph. So we haven't read that as a group together. So, thank you. And I want to add, Jana, just to what you said, to highlight, like when I say, you know, I get a feeling, that feeling comes from my body. So if I'm all up here in my head and disconnected, you know, from the neck down, it's going to be really hard to connect or to sense. And so this is where I found it's just been so helpful for me to have a yoga practice, which I'm getting back into, and to have a mindfulness practice where I pause and tune into my body and what it is that I'm feeling, because the guidance, I feel it in my body. I feel something in my, usually it's in my core, like in my torso and my gut. When it's a yes, it feels like this sort of lightness. And when it's a no, it's like constriction. That's the best way that I can put it. So I just wanted to add to that piece that this is about tuning into your body, which as we have perhaps thought ourselves or heard in course circles, you know, there's, and I will speak for myself. I used to always be like, well, body's not real, not worth paying, you know, any attention to it, but hey, we're walking around to these things and actually they can be that communication device and used by Holy Spirit to help us listen. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you, Jana. Who else, anybody else have a question or a comment before we keep reading? We're about to read a summary from Robert Perry about this whole section, about three components for the type of day that Jesus is teaching Helen and Bill to have. Looks like we're good. Okay, let's keep reading. So again, these are three components for the type of day that Jesus is teaching Helen and Bill and us to have. So we're at the very bottom, the last paragraph on page 1776. The day that Jesus is teaching Helen and Bill to have is just the opposite. So rather than that chain of miscreation, he's teaching to have a day that is just the opposite. We can see this day as having three components. The first component is policing the mind. In the form of mind watching, and thought correction. When Jesus says that Bill, quote unquote, allowed himself fear-producing attitudes, or was very unmiracle-minded toward Dora, or when he refers to Helen's irritation or strained attempt at pardon, the implication is that Bill and Helen ideally should have been watching for such reactions and then moving to correct them. The goal, in other words, is for them to police their minds and thus keep their thoughts free of anything except love. The second component is asking for guidance. This too crops up repeatedly. Bill should have asked for guidance about matters as small as the cab situation, the storage problem, and photocopying the notes. Helen should have asked for guidance about the lunch invitation, and she did ask for guidance about meeting to go over the notes, as well as about how to handle the phone call to Bill in the evening. The third component is giving miracles. Again and again in this narrative, we see that policing the mind and asking for guidance would have produced remarkably conscientious behavior, behavior that Jesus describes as kindly, healing, gracious, respectful, and courteous. He is talking, in other words, about the very expressions of love that he calls miracles. Giving miracles is the dominant focus in this narrative. There are a dozen vignettes in which either Helen or Bill should have or did behave lovingly towards someone else. What is especially striking about all three of these components is that they extend down to a fairly minute level of detail. Helen was not supposed to privately enjoy the caricaturing of someone who was not even in the room. Bill was supposed to ask about giving their cab away. Helen was supposed to invite Bill to join the group for lunch before telling Anne that she was going to do so. This minuteness is something Jesus specifically points out in relation to the third component. There are ways of treating others in which only consistent courtesy, even in very little things, is offered. In Jesus's vision of the day, then, Helen and Bill are meant to police the mind even in very little things, ask for guidance even in very little things, and behave lovingly even in very little things. As a result, the typical day in which unloving thoughts and unguided decisions lead to hurtful actions would be replaced by a new day in which loving thoughts and guided decisions would lead to healing actions. And since the people blessed by those actions would presumably pass that blessing on to others, the end result would be to replace the chain of miscreation with an interlocking chain of miracles. And that concludes Cameo 14. So let's back up, because there's some really good stuff in here. Let's start with policing the mind. So Jana mentioned this before. So policing the mind is watching your mind, noticing your thoughts, having that extreme willing level of mindfulness to notice just what you're thinking and where your thoughts are. This is an area where I feel like mindfulness meditation has been really, really helpful to me in helping me develop that ongoing awareness of just watching where my mind is. And is it down in the muck, adding to fear, spending a lot of time there, or is it focused on the Holy Spirit? I don't remember if I shared this or not in our previous call, but in our Love Lens work and in anti-racism work, there's a word called centering. And basically, like, whose voice are you centering? Is it a white person centering their own voice? Are we centering, you know, Black voices? And Freedom and I were talking, I think I did share this last week, about centering the Holy Spirit. And that phrase has just really been sticking with me and noticing, where am I centering the Holy Spirit and where am I not? Where do I feel like if I'm centering the Holy Spirit that I can just lay down my concerns, lay down my worries, and say, Holy Spirit, I'm giving this to you. You know, I'm laying this down for you. I'm not going to keep mulling over this. So policing the mind is our first component, which means we have to watch our thoughts. With the next component of asking for guidance, you know, I just want to bring in a personal example here. With going back to what I shared about white privilege being on display at the Capitol, that meme that I shared, I've noticed in my journey that mind watching, even surrounding what I share on Facebook, can be another way of watching the mind. In the past, I can remember multiple times, and if I knew back, like when Facebook first started, that like one account would be enough, like why in the world would I want a second one? But I had separated out like high school, elementary, college friends from the account that I use. So I have two, but I don't really use the other one. But on the other one, I remember I used to share some things with a sense of judgment and anger of wanting to correct other people who didn't feel the same way that I did. It was like a, you know, I'm throwing this meme out there and this is where I'm at. And it had a feeling of attack. If I'm totally honest, there was a feeling of attack there. I didn't have that with what I shared recently. It felt like I needed to say something and speak. And so that's where it came from. So it was very different for me this time, but I wanted to just bring that up to highlight that even, you know, in choosing what we are sharing, just looking at underlying, you know, policing the mind, what is there that is prompting me to share this? Is it coming from attack? Is it coming from love? You know, which one is it? Or wanting to get a conversation going around something. So that's that. Anybody want to say anything else about policing the mind? Because I want to talk about all three of these things, asking for guidance and giving miracles. John?
I'd like to say something. I wasn't really policing my mind, but I guess I was in a sense today. I called my brother-in-law and he's a very stout Republican. He doesn't like Trump, but he made a comment about what Biden had said about if this would have been Black Lives Matter, things would have turned out differently. And he's like, that's ridiculous. That would have never happened, blah, blah, blah. And I was tempted to react, but then I realized he's not gonna hear me. He's in a different state of mind. And no matter what I said to him, he would react back. So I just let it go, you know? And I think there's times we do have to overlook those things that people say and just let it go, because you're not going to convince somebody that doesn't want to be convinced of anything, you know? So I just wanted to put that in there.
Yeah. Thank you, John. And that might be times we're just guided to listen and just hold space, because when things are really intense, like for instance, this just happened at the Capitol, it probably won't be a time when people will listen, you know, when you're in dialogue with somebody, it's probably not a time when somebody would be open to listening to a different perspective. So I hear you. So thank you. I see your hand. Your name is not your real name on your Zoom.
No, it's Sarah.
Sarah, hi.
There are many, many thoughts going through my mind. And lots of overlap from various things, but the love lens, I just wanted to point out again, thank you so much for that. And I'm trying to share it with so many people, but that reminds me of questioning the difference between reflecting and overthinking. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the therapy dog training. I train my children at a dog, but it's kind of refreshing. It's very sad, but I'm also looking at it as an opportunity. I mean, it's amazing to see. I saw this sign the other day. It says, humankind, be both. And I asked the owner where they got the sign, and they said a 6 or 7 year old created it. And I just think to myself, how wonderful and refreshing, especially after witnessing the picture of the lynching with the children that were there to witness it, and thinking about what those children were trained. and how that has continued. And then after seeing what happened at the Capitol, and needless to say, I've been trying to figure out, I have to really police my mind and reflect on my intentions and what I want to share with my children, because I don't want hate to fester hate. And as I do that, it's interesting because, again, what you guys were talking about, the karma, there have been several opportunities that are unrelated to the Capitol, but that deal with just relationships in general with brothers or friends, that utilizing what I reflected on, I was able to create a change.
Sarah, thank you so much for those thoughts. I wrote down, humankind be both. What wise words from a child. I absolutely love that. For anybody who is not listening to the Love Lens or hasn't gotten here yet, I think it may have been episode 3, where we talked about slavery as the ultimate form of separation and the effects of slavery that are still here with us today in this world. And we showed a picture, Freedom showed a picture of a lynching, and lynchings used to be events that people took their children to watch in their Sunday finest. You know, it'd be out having a picnic and sit around and watch the lynching happen. And this is what basically children were taught, was to dehumanize people. They weren't, you know, human beings, people with black skin. And that was what was taught and what was passed down. And we can see ways, you know, these incredible writers and scholars can trace how, you know, that dehumanization, again, is still, I mean, think about George Floyd, how that still, you know, happens today. So it does absolutely make us stop and think about, you know, what are we teaching constantly? And as the course says, we're all teachers and learners, and we are constantly teaching, whether we want to or not. So, so Sarah, thank you so much for your addition there. That was really helpful. I also, like, you opened with thinking about reflecting versus overthinking, and I'm forgetting. I think you were linking that to policing the mind, right? Just yeah. Okay. Reflecting versus overthinking. Yeah. I feel like for me, that's an important distinction. And I find that with reflecting, it's like there's honesty there. There is transparency with the Holy Spirit that's there. Overthinking, being, you know, an anxiety disorder person in recovery, overthinking to me is like ruminating, where like a thought comes in and it's like we just hash it around and around and around, and it bounces around the insides of our heads until we're just, you know, so tired of it that we don't want to do it anymore. But I feel like it's a line to even see. It takes awareness to even make that distinction that those are two different things. So thank you for adding that. Thank you, Sarah. Steve.
Hello.
Hi.
This whole thing that we're talking about thoughts and miscreations and all that good stuff, and then you said the word recovery in your last little deal there, and I'm a veteran of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the first step, I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, reads, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Well, at some point, a year or so ago, as I was working through the course, it just became really evident that I had to admit that my thoughts, that I was powerless over my thoughts, and that my miscreations had become unmanageable. And to me, that was kind of a key. And along with that, I'm doing a review right now, going back through the workbook and doing some reviews. And I just passed through lesson 16, and it says, I have no neutral thoughts. And policing our thoughts and realizing that you know, the thoughts that we have in darkness that we're ultimately judging inside are not neutral, and that we're projecting those out as we're holding those thoughts. We think they're secrets, but they're not, you know. And I think the shift comes when we can start, or I personally can start looking at things from, you know, the love that the Course teaches, you know, policing our thoughts and catching them and saying, you know, asking for, you know, guidance to see things differently. And it's really, really powerful and just, oh my God, you know, this is crazy. Thank you for pulling this all together. And
yeah, thank you. Thank you. And that's, I mean, to just pick up on what you said about the 12 steps, I was powerless over my anxiety. It was literally like, you know, like I had to admit that and recognize that there was something outside of my own thought system that was the only thing that was going to be able to help. And so I never formally studied the 12 steps, but I had seen the, you know, the parallel with the course. So
yeah.
And you're absolutely right. We have no neutral thoughts. We think they're secrets, but they are not. We are creating all the time. And one of the most important things that I think, so we had a really great call today because we're prepping for our next Love Lens episode. And for those of you who are signed up for the Love Lens, we're going to be sending out an email about the events at the Capitol and some thoughts. And one of the things that we said that Freedom was actually contributing was that it's not enough to just see what happened, feel horrified, and retreat to, I don't know what anything's for. This isn't real. You know, to retreat to these course ideas that are true and helpful. We can't do that without also saying to ourselves, like if we have no neutral thoughts, this is coming from my mind. Like what I'm seeing out there is coming from my mind. How have I been complicit in creating this world that is so painful? How have I done that? And with race, that means for me as a white woman looking at, you know, again, all the things that I feel like I can't actually assume that everybody's in the Love Lens, but, you know, looking at things like my privilege and my, my internalized supremacy and racism and those sorts of things. So I have to be able to do that type of work. And that requires, I feel like, some stamina, some racial stamina where I can stand, knowing the truth of our innocence and be able to turn to look at that darkness, you know, that's there. Freedom said that her first meditation teacher, I love this. I think it was Stephen Levine, said that the happiest people he knew were the people who spent the most time examining their darkness. And I was just like, wow, you know, with this, because what are we doing? We're removing blocks to love and we're not doing it alone. That's the beautiful thing. So thank you for letting me just share that, Stephen. I just really, that you, I have no neutral thoughts just triggered all that for me. So thank you. I have to, and, I just want to make sure, Steve, you see the little thank you in the chat for you. I have to just read what, Andrea said. How perfect is it, was it, that Cameo 14 was too long to get through last week so we could still be here this week focusing on the material, bookending the Capitol riot so we can return to talking about policing the mind tonight and looking at that rather than talking about Edgar Cayce, who will be interesting for sure next week. But it's funny because tonight, usually I have told you all that I'll read the Cameo that we're reading tonight. For whatever reason today, I just could not read the Edgar Cayce Cameo. Like it was literally like, it wasn't even that I don't want to do it. It was just like, maybe it was, there was a resistance, but then finally it was like, oh, maybe we're not supposed to read Edgar Cayce tonight. And we're just going to spend this time on the rest of this Cameo. So that it can seem like a small thing, but this is how orchestrated it is. It's not a small thing. This is orchestrated. Our learning, you know, is orchestrated. And for those of you who are in the Love Lens, I promise you the next episode is going to blow you away. And for those of you who are not, we will be releasing the whole program publicly at the end of the month. You're going to hear about Emily's journey in the upcoming episode with her Love Lens work. And it's going to be really, really real. It's going to be really good. So anyway.
You know, Corinne.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention, I was so disappointed that the Georgia runoff, where Raphael Warnock won the Senate seat, it was so exciting. And, you know, to have all of this chaos erupt at the very same time, where, because I think God is, I think there's nothing to worry about in the long run. I think God is just orchestrating everything beautifully. And keeping a focus on that, I think, is really important. Because look, this man is from the deep South, and he could rise to this position is just miraculous and exciting. And I'm just sorry that, you know, it wasn't,
we couldn't
the headline that day.
Right. I hear you. Paula, you're reminding me that, and this is related, but loosely, I shared a video on, again, my personal, it's, you don't have to sort through that meme comment. Like I left a very lengthy comment on that meme. I shared this most recently. It's a video where Freedom Cartwright was interviewed by a woman named Melanie. I can't remember her last name. And Freedom very clearly makes a link between how the riots at the Capitol are indeed linked to race, because one of the, I think, comments on my post was that, like, you're making everything about race. She clearly links how that is linked to race, but it's not apparent unless you have an understanding of the caste system that we are in. So I highly recommend that everybody go to my personal profile. I don't think I share, I didn't share it on my page, just my personal profile. It's a Facebook Live. And I think it's like maybe 13 minutes in that Freedom starts talking about the caste system, but it's really great to watch the whole thing. I would highly recommend it, because I feel like now more than ever, we need to be listening to Black and brown bodies. And the video is just fantastic. So I highly recommend that. Actually, I'll even share it in the Facebook group, just so you don't have to go digging for it.
It's Melanie DeBruni.
Thank DeBerry. You. DeBerry. Right. Thank you, John. Uh-huh. Awesome. All right. Any other final comments or questions before we go? And I just want to again say, oh, Andrea, I was going to say thank you, Andrea, for highlighting just like the divine timing, but go ahead.
Well, I do love those kinds of synchronicities, like, you know, Jesus at work there. But I just wanted to thank Paula for making that comment that she just made about feeling like everything's going to be okay in the long run, because it reminds me of a cameo we were reading, I don't know how long ago, but it was the one where Jesus was talking about sitting on the board of directors of the children's organization, so he would have gone in and fixed the error even if Helen hadn't, or he could have. And that gave me so much peace when I first heard that one, because it's like, okay, Jesus can fix some of these errors. It's like Jesus was protecting all of the members of Congress from not being hurt or injured or killed or something like that. Like Jesus, as bad as it looks, Jesus was in there making sure it wasn't really bad. And it gives me a lot of peace to feel like he's on the board of directors of the government. The rightful government.
Oh, I hear you. I feel like there's more there that we could, more like we could take that and sort of run with it too, because then the flip side of it is thinking like, well, when there is shooting, like, where was Jesus, you know, where was he in that? And, I know that we are, I don't want to say like, hey, Saved by the Bell, we can't talk about that right now, but that is, something to sit with, actually. Why don't, that's just something that we can sort of contemplate.
Corinth.
It's not people that are, I'm sorry, it's not Jesus that's doing it, it's people. Is that Christine?
Yeah. Where did you say you're going to post
the video? I will post it in our From Anxiety to Love Facebook group.
Okay, thank you.
That after the call. Yeah, thank you. So yeah, so Andrea, I just wanted to add that in, because that's if we follow that, you know, the logic, we can easily be like, well, where was Jesus then? And this is where, you know, we were given free will, and there are people who are using free will to do, you know, very hurtful and harmful things. So yes. All right, everybody, let's just pause for a moment and just come into a nice deep breath together. Turning our attention to the Holy Spirit, centering the Holy Spirit, knowing that everything that we see is coming from our shared mind, and that from this place of stillness that we began in our opening meditation, from this place of stillness, we can be directed to go on all the busy doings on which we are sent, but knowing that we always can come back to this place of rest. This is our connection with source, with truth, with love, with joy, and connecting with our sense of willingness to look at everything that we need to be happy learners as best we can. And taking a nice deep breath in and out. And I will see you all next week. We will be reading the Edgar Cayce material. Thank you all. I'll post that video in the group, and love you. I'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.